This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
If your roof starts to leak or your floors really squeak, you live in a money pit.
Money pit.
If your basement needs a pump or your place looks like a dump, you live in a money pit.
Money pit.
Pick up the telephone, fix up your home sweet home by calling 888 Money Pit.
The Money Pit is presented by Home Advisor and Bonide. Now here are Tom and Leslie.
Coast to coast and floorboards to shingles, this is the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Pick up the phone, give us a call on this beautiful spring weekend at 1-888-MONEYPIT because we want to talk with you about your home projects, whether they're inside or out. From foundations to shingles, whatever project you're working on, we're here to help. Help you find ways to get it done quicker, easier, faster. Make sure you can do it once, do it right so you won't have to do it again. Or just tips to help you improve and beautify your space. Whether that's outdoor, perhaps with a patio or deck, or inside with a kitchen or bathroom, we are here to help you get started. Help yourself first, though, by picking up the phone and calling us at 1-888-MONEYPIT, 888-666-3974. First up on today's show, we're going to talk also about one place in the home that can get pretty disgusting if it's not cleaned, and that's your range hood. It is not a pretty sight, folks. If you look, turn your head and look up into it, it does get pretty nasty, but it just doesn't do the job very well if it's like that. So we're going to have some tips on the easiest way to get it cleaned, looking great, and working better too, and keeping the air clean inside your house. That kitchen exhaust fan can be a full-blown polluter if it's not running right. So we'll give you some tips to get yours the once-over so it'll be working properly.
Plus, are you ready to step outside and start enjoying this beautiful weather? Well, one way to do just that is by building a pergola. It's a fun weekend project, and Tommy Silva from This Old House is stopping by to tell us exactly how to get that done.
Plus, with all the lawn and garden work going on now, you might be storing more hazardous liquids like gas and oil and grease and such. We're going to have some tips on the best way to store those flammable liquids safely so that your garage or your shed does not become a fire hazard.
But first, we want to hear what you are working on. Midway through April, guys, we are cruising towards Memorial Day. Let's get your house ready because before you know it, it's going to be summertime. And we want everything to be in tip-top shape so it can be a lot of relaxing and not a lot of home improving.
Call us right now at 1-888-MONEYPIT, 888-666-3974. Let's get to it. Leslie, who's first?
Nancy in Georgia is dealing with some flooring squeaks. What is going on at your money pit?
I'm hoping you can tell me.
Okay.
Well, tell us where you're hearing them. What kind of floor? When does it happen?
The house is 48 years old, Okay. And I have pulled up the carpet that was in there, and I'd like to put hardwood. But there's a squeak right in the doorway. It's in the top floor of my two-story home.
Okay.
And I can't get to the flooring unless I tear out the ceiling of my dining room.
Yeah, you're thinking you have to deal with this from the bottom, and that's not the case. Now, when you took the carpet up, what are you looking at? Are you looking at plywood, like old plywood?
Subfloor.
Subfloor, right. So it's
like a solid subfloor. It's not like slats where you can see through.
No, it's like 8x4s maybe, or
right, that's
8x6.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what you want to do here, and this is typical, what you need to do is you need to figure out where the floor joists are under that floor. And it's not that hard to do because if you look at the floor itself, you're going to see a nailing pattern where the floor joists are running. They're probably going to be every 16 inches and they're going to go from the back wall of your house towards the front wall. And what you want to do is screw where those nail heads are. You want to drive a drywall screw through the floor and tighten up the flooring, because what's happening is the flooring is loose in that area. And as you step on the floor and you get that squeak, squeaks happen for one of two reasons. It's either because the floorboards themselves, the plywood itself is moving against it, the adjoining seam and squeaking, right? Or it could be that the plywood is pulling the nail in and out of the floor joist below, and that's squeaking. But when you screw the floor down as opposed to nailing it down, you tighten everything up. And it's a really good idea to do that before you carpet, because even though you found one now, chances are the minute you put that floor down, you'll find three more. So if you screw that floor down, all that subfloor down nice and tight using these long drywall screws, which you can drive in with a drill, you're going to find that that floor is going to be a lot quieter in the long run.
Okay, I want to put hardwood over it. Can I put those under hardwood?
Sure. Yeah, they're going to be flush with the surface when you're done. What kind of hardwood? Are you going to use solid hardwood, or you want to use engineered, or what?
I want to use solid hardwood. I have hardwood in the hallway that it meets, and then I have tile in the bathroom. And okay. So I have the spaces there for me to use the hardwood. And I'm in the South, so it's not as expensive here.
Yeah, you could use pre-finished hardwood, or you could use raw hardwood and finish it yourself. There's a lot of options in pre-finished today, though. It's beautiful. And the floor finishes are actually tougher than what you can apply on your own.
That's what I'm thinking, and I'm thinking I'll have to pull the baseboards.
Yes, absolutely.
And leave some space, a little space between the wall and the flooring.
Yes, that's correct.
I laid the hall. Okay.
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, you got the right idea. Yeah, just make sure you screw that subfloor down with those long drywall screws or wood screws that you put in with a drill. Typically, they're going to have a Phillips or they'll have a hex head, and you can just drill them right in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, I'm familiar with us. That's fantastic.
All right.
I appreciate your help so much.
You got it, Nancy. Good luck with that project.
Stephen from Kansas has some issues with stone house. Tell us what's going on.
I have a native limestone house that was built. This is in the middle of Kansas, and they used a lot of limestone years ago. And this house dates back to the late 1800s. I have a problem with the mortar breaking out between the door frames of the house and the limestone. And I'm not sure exactly what to use.
Okay, so you have this mortar that's falling out between the stones itself, and that's called pointing, and that's pretty common, okay? Now, what you need to do is to remove the loose areas of mortar and to repoint it or reapply new mortar in those spaces where it's lost. So to do that, you're going to want to mix one part Portland cement to two parts lime. It's a type of Mason's lime. And then 8 or 9 parts of a washed building sand. And that's sort of the mix that is going to be necessary to create new mortar in those seams and have it stick. Now, that type of mortar mix is designed to be able to be very workable so that you can get it in between those joints and do those repairs and have it stick and last another 100 years. So it's one part Portland cement, two part lime, and about 9 parts sand. And then you add just enough water to kind of make it workable. Don't make it too wet, though, otherwise it'll just sort of fall off your trowel.
I see. Okay. I was trying to find something on the internet, and I could not find what I thought was proper.
That's typically the way it's done. Now, you can also buy a mortar mix, but when you have a really old house like that, most people are going to mix it themselves.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it, and I really enjoy your show.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you listening.
You are tuned to the Money Pit Home Improvement Radio Show. Give us a call at 888 Money Pit, presented by Home Advisor, where it's easy to find top-rated local home improvement pros for any project. Just go to homeadvisor.com.
And just ahead, we've got some spring cleaning tips for those overlooked spaces in your home. It's all coming up after this.
You live in a money pit.
Everyone should know that drinking water is important to staying hydrated and healthy. Having safe, clean water is the last thing you want to worry about, but unfortunately, according to extensive research by the Environmental Working Group, 3 out of 4 homes in America have harmful contaminants right in its tap water.
That's why we are thrilled to be working with AquaTrue. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process, and their countertop purifiers work with no installation or plumbing. It removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters and is specifically designed to combat chemicals like PFAS in your water supply. And they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options.
and its proprietary purification technology is independently tested by IAPMO to NSF and ANSI standards to remove over 80 of the most harmful contaminants, including chlorine, fluoride, arsenic, PFAs known as forever chemicals, nitrate, and many more. I can truly taste the difference when I compare it with my old water filter. AquaTrue saves you money also. Just one set of filters from their classic purifier makes the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. That's less than 3 cents a bottle. Plus, you'll save the environment from tons of plastic waste.
AquaTrue comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. And today, Money Pit listeners can receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to AquaTrue.com. That's AquaTrue.com and enter code MONEYPIT at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to AquaTrue.com and use promo code MONEYPIT. Money Pit. Making good homes better. Welcome back to the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Pick up the phone and give us a call right now with your home improvement project, your do-it-yourself dilemma. If there's a job that you need to get done around the house, you don't know where to begin, begin by calling us at 1-888-MONEYPIT, presented by Home Advisor. You can get instantly matched with top-rated pros for any home project and book appointments online, all for free.
Sandra in Michigan, you've got the Money Pit. What's going on at your house?
The drywall seams in my ceiling in one bedroom and in the corners in two rooms and in my ceiling in my unheated garage. I live close to Lake Michigan, so there's a lot of moisture here. It gets really cold. And I'm wondering, how do I repair it? Do I have to take all that old tape off, or can I repair it as is?
The tape, sometimes it gets loose when it separates. You definitely need to pull that all off and do a little bit of sanding. But what I would do is not put paper tape back. I would use fiberglass tape. It is going to stay a lot better than the old paper. It also takes a lot less skill to put it up and get it done right, and it's stronger. So you could put a thin coat of spackle, embed that fiberglass tape, you just kind of lay it right into the spackle and kind of run the blade over it, and then put two or three more coats of spackle, thin coats is the key. Don't put it thick, very thin. And that will tend to bridge that gap. The fact that you're seeing cracking in those areas you describe is actually not that unusual, because the house is going to expand and contract, especially I see your house is about, 13, 14 years old. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to have a lot of movement over the first 20 years or so. And so those types of cracks in those particular areas in seams and such is pretty normal. But as it happens, you've got to pull that old loose tape out and then re-spackle it. And it's the kind of project, you know, maybe you do when you're getting ready to paint. It's not structural. It's really just cosmetic. But if you don't take it apart and put it back together again properly, it's not going to stay, right? You can't just spackle over because the cracks will come right through it. Okay.
I understand. No shortcuts.
Good luck, Sandra. Thanks so much for calling us at 1-888-MONEYPIT.
Jay in North Carolina is dealing with a supreme oopsie on a countertop. What happened?
Well, I don't know. I purchased the property about a year ago, and actually I have my son living there. He's graduating from a college in the Raleigh area, and he's living in that in the apartment, and it's wonderful. The only problem is there's a burn hole on the laminate countertop.
Now, you know, Jay, there's a story behind that, but of course your son hasn't coughed it up yet, I'm sure.
No, this is before he moved in, but anyway, it's okay. My point is, it's like right out in the middle of the thing, so it's this big burn hole, and I was just wondering, is there a way I can cut it out and then put another patch or laminate over it? It's in butcher block style.
Well, the good news is that you could do a built-in countertop and a built-in cutting board or a built-in piece of marble. And if you do it in something that's complementary, look, it may be a little bit weird to have a cutting board on the finished side of the countertop like that, but it'll certainly look like it was always intended to be there. And you'll get away with it. The other thing that you could do is you could re-laminate the countertop. You can't fix the burned surface because the plastic's been damaged. So that's not something that's possible. You can't cut in a new piece of laminate because it'll be patchy and it'll look lousy. What you could do is you could put a new piece of laminate across the entire surface. So you're keeping the structure of the countertop, but you're gluing a new piece of laminate on top of that. Installing laminate's not that difficult if you have some basic DIY skills. You would scuff up the original surface. You would apply contact cement to both the new laminate and the old laminate. You would lay it down and you would press it from the middle on out to get out any air bubbles and rub it all out. And then with a router and a special laminate trimming bit, you would trim the laminate edge very clean to the existing edge of the top. And you'd have a brand new laminate surface when you were all done. It's best if you can take the old top off temporarily to do this so that you don't have to work around walls and that sort of thing. But it's not hard to do. And that's one way to have to avoid to get it repaired without having to physically replace the whole thing. Does that make sense?
Excellent idea. Thank you so much. Appreciate your help.
Well, if you've got a kitchen vent fan, that's one of the sort of recirculating types. Leslie, I put those in the better than nothing category. I mean, as far as an air cleaning appliance is concerned, I mean, they're not nearly as good as a vent fan that takes the smoky, greasy air outside your house. But it means that you have to keep them clean, and it's even more important when they're the recirculating type. Otherwise, they're just going to vent all that gook back into your air.
That's right. I mean, they're really not the best. But if you've got one, here's what you need to do. First of all, you need to remove both the metal and the charcoal filters that are in that exhaust fan. Then go ahead and soak the metal filters, and you can replace those charcoal filters, and you should be doing that every 6 months. Now, wipe away any grease from the underside of the hood, and then replace the light bulb.
And, of course, if you want a better option, consider installing a fan that draws air out of the kitchen and vents it to the outside of your home, the same way a bath exhaust fan would. This does a whole bunch better in terms of trying to keep that air clean in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's not only going to help with that air quality, it can actually help with the odors, as well as all of the grease that builds up on cabinets and soffits. So you really have to get that dirty, yucky air from the kitchen outside. And that's truly the best way with an outdoor vented exhaust fan.
Yeah, and once those cabinets get greasy like that, it's so hard to get the grease out of them, especially if it's an open grain like, say, oak. So you want to make sure you stay on top of it, all right? 888-666-3974. Let's get back to the phones.
Anastasia in Colorado's on the line with a bathtub question. What's going on?
Well, I have a tub drain. I'm trying to get that out, the drain out, because it's, you know, I can't put a plug in it now. So what I've tried is the drain remover tool, or it's a plug wrench, and then I also tried the flaring tool to get it out, and neither one of them works because the little crosshairs in the bottom aren't still in there.
Oh.
Because it's like from 1960 tub.
So you have nothing to grab onto, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So I've tried to get WD-40 in there underneath to try, but I can't reach under there. And then I could crawl under the house, but I don't want to do that. So I was trying to think of a better way of getting it out.
If I understand it correctly, this normally would unscrew, but what you're trying to grab onto is either stripped or completely gone.
Correct.
I have only two suggestions for you. Number one is to hire a plumber, which is probably, you didn't need me to tell you that, but I will say that the plumbers deal with this kind of thing all the time. And secondly, if I was a plumber and I was faced with this and there was absolutely no other way to get this off, I would probably drill it off and chisel it away, which you can do with a cold chisel. And it's not a pleasant process, and it's time-consuming and kind of a pain in the neck. But when all else fails and you just got nothing to grab onto, that's a way to get it done.
All right, that's what I thought, but I thought you might have a little trick up your sleeve.
But that's a trick, but it's a lot of hard work. Anastasia, thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
Now we've got Roland in North Carolina on the line who needs some help removing some rust. What can we do for you today?
I have some exposed I-beams in my basement that support a poured floor garage above. And during construction, obviously they experienced some rust. And they're 20 feet long, 12 inches high. So I've got about 400 square feet, if you will, of rusted steel. And I'm looking to paint them or finish them off a little bit. And I was looking at the Rust-Oleum products and figuring I would go through 15 or 20 cans just to cover that amount of space. So I was wondering if you guys had a better idea and how much prep I should do. Should I just leave? They haven't rusted since the house has been finished. But it does have a coating of rust on there. Is there a better way, and how should I be concerned about prepping them before painting?
Well, a light sanding would be important to remove any of that loose rust, that loose surface rust. And it's not deep. It's just on the surface.
That's right.
And then using a Rust-Oleum primer would be the next step, not the surface paint, but the primer. Now, instead of using, you know, individual spray cans, why don't you buy the gallons of Rust-Oleum and rent a sprayer if you have to, a paint sprayer from a rental yard? It would make it super easy.
Right. That's the best way to go.
Yeah. Plus, you know, you're inside and using a can of spray paint is not going to make you feel very well, and certainly going to make the house stink up a storm. While certainly easy for, you know, application, it's not really the best approach for an interior project. If you're using, you know, regular paint through a sprayer, as long as you protect everything and cover up your ceiling from overspray and the floor, et cetera, you're going to be in great shape.
What I like to do is to try to depressurize a room when I'm spraying in it. So how would you do that? Very simply, you'd open up a window, stick a window fan in it, make sure it points out, and then open up another window or a door on the other side of the room and get some cross ventilation. This way you're always moving the air outside the house, replacing it with fresh air.
Sounds good. Is there any concern with the rust coming back through?
Not if you prime it. If you don't prime it, it can definitely come right through. But if you prime it, especially with a rust-inhibiting primer like Rust-Oleum, it's going to kind of lock that in place. And as long as you don't have any kind of like serious leakage or something like that, I don't expect it to come back through.
Super. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
Hey, are you ready to step outside and start enjoying the beautiful weather? Well, one way that you can do that is by building a pergola. Tom Silva from This Old House is stopping by to tell us how to get it done and says that they actually can be more DIY friendly than they look. That's a nice surprise. That's all coming up next.
You live in a money pit.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
The Money Pit is presented by HomeAdvisor.com. Whether it's minor repairs or major remodels, leave it to HomeAdvisor to do the work. Check out HomeAdvisor.com.
Where home solutions live, this is the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Pick up the phone, give us a call right now. We're here to help. The number is 1-888-MONEY-PIT, presented by HomeAdvisor, the fast and easy way to find the right pro for any kind of home project, whether it's a small repair or a major remodel.
Now we've got Hong in Pennsylvania on the line who is having an issue with carpenter ants. Tell us what's going on.
One day, in the front of the house, we have these wooden pillars, and in a round base, suddenly I saw there was a neatly cut hole, and the carpenter ants were climbing out of that. What's an effective way of getting rid of them?
Well, there's a product called Phantom, P-H-A-N-T-O-M, that's a professionally applied pesticide, Hong. Works very well for carpenter ants and roaches and other types of pests like that. And the reason it works particularly well is because it's a non-detectable pesticide. So the ants go through this product and they bring it back to their nest and they pass it from insect to insect. I think of it as germ warfare for insects. And as they pass it from insect to insect, it will very quickly wipe out the entire nest. And I think a professional product like that is going to be the safest and most effective way to get rid of these ants. Because if you use a lot of over-the-counter products, chances are you're not going to get all the ants where they live, because you're not going to find any product that's non-detectable that's available as an over-the-counter. And you'll end up putting more and more pesticide in than you probably really need to. So I would take a look at phantomhome.com, P-H-A-N-T-O-M, home.com. You can put in your zip code, find a number of pest control operators near your house, and have them provide you some estimates for controlling this. You really need to get it under control, because carpenter ants are called carpenter ants for a very good reason. They do eat wood. We want to make sure they don't eat anything that's structural in your house.
Yeah, you know that's what I thought. Okay.
Good luck, Hong. Thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEY-PIT.
Well, if you flip through any lawn or garden magazine, you're sure to come across landscapes that include arbors and pergolas. These wooden yard structures are so beautiful and well within most DIYers' reach.
That's right. And here with tips for building both, we welcome This Old House general contractor, Tom Silva. Welcome, Tom.
Nice to be here, guys.
Now, this is a project that I think a lot of folks are interested in, because outdoor living is so important today. We want to get outside and really enjoy that space, kind of treat it like an extension of our own living rooms or kitchens or the places that make us comfortable. These are the types of additions that can do that. Let's start by talking about what the difference is between an arbor and a pergola. So what's an arbor?
Well, think of an arbor as almost like an accent piece that gets you into the front entry of your house, or maybe into the garden. It's like a doorway to the outside of your garden to walk through this little entryway.
So it's just a nice architectural feature that kind of helps to establish the space.
Right.
So what's a pergola?
A pergola is like a freestanding structure, usually with like four legs, maybe six legs, depending on your design. And it's, you know, a place that you can sit under and entertain.
Now, does it have a permanent roof?
It doesn't have a permanent roof. Lots of times you have the plants that will grow up over the roof or the ceiling of it. It's because the roof design in lots of cases are strips of wood or lattice, and that allows the plants to grow on it.
Now, because it's a fairly large structure, it's going to have some weight to it, some heft to it. Does it have to be properly secured to the ground, just like you would any deck, for example?
Well, it has to be secured to the ground properly, so you're probably going to have to go into the ground, at least to your frost line, because you don't want it to come up and down. But I guess the biggest thing you want to think about with a pergola is whether or not you need a building permit to build it, because you don't want to have that thing built and then find out that you're too close to the lot line, or you had to go down a certain depth for your footings, and you want to make sure that you've done all that right.
Now, what about an arbor? That sounds like it's a lot simpler project.
Arbor is a lot simpler. I mean, an arbor is that entryway into your garden or whatever, and you put some lattice work on it, and you've got a nice little place to grow some plants.
Now, let's talk about materials. There's a lot of choices out there in weather-resistant materials. If you just wanted to tackle a project yourself, you're a DIYer, would you simply start with pressure-treated?
Pressure-treated is a great way to start. I mean, it's inexpensive wood, or you can go the next route up. You can go to a cedar. A red cedar is not as good as a white cedar, but it will hold up. It can give you some life. If you wanted to use an accent wood like an oak, I would stay away from red oak because it won't hold up to the weather. A white oak will hold up, but you're going to have to really treat that wood and make sure you really treat the part that goes into the ground.
Now, it occurs to me that this may be the one and only time you can do a really, really good job finishing this wood structure, because especially if you're going to put vines on it, you're never going to get them off.
Right.
You can't mask around the ivy.
Right, right.
So what would you actually do on finishing these before you actually start your planting?
If you're going to use pressure treated, you got to think about how you're going to finish it if you don't like the natural look of that wood. And it can be a real issue later on when the plants start growing.
Great point. Tom Silva from TV's This Old House, thank you so much for stopping by the Money Pit. Can't wait to get started. Perhaps you will tackle it as well this weekend.
Thanks, guys. It's always nice to be here.
All right, catch the current season of This Old House and Ask This Old House on PBS. For local listings and step-by-step videos of many common home improvement projects, visit thisoldhouse.com.
And This Old House is brought to you on PBS by State Farm. And just ahead, with all the lawn and garden work going on right now, you may be storing more hazardous chemicals like gas and oil and grease. So we're going to have some tips on the best way to do just that so that your shed and garage don't become a fire hazard. That's all coming up after this.
You live in a body pit.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place
for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The Money Pit is brought to you by Sense. The Sense Smart Home Energy Monitor works like a fitness tracker, telling you what's on in your home and how much it costs, so you can save electricity and money. Learn more at Sense.com.
Where home solutions live. Welcome back to the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
We're here to help you with your home improvement projects, your remodeling challenges, your decor dilemmas. Give us a call with those questions right now at 1-888-MONEYPIT.
Heidi in North Carolina is on the line with an electrical problem. How can we help you today?
Well, I have a kind of a two-part question. I have an older home. It's about 68 years old. We paid an electrician to come in when we converted over to a heat pump from an oil furnace to up our service. And we have an old fuse box that are the screw-in type fuses. And when he put the system in, the new electrical box, he was supposed to convert everything over into the new electrical box. And he left the little electrical box, the little fuse box in my kitchen. And unfortunately, he put the new electrical box on the outside of my house. That would be okay, except I'm a single woman and I don't, you know, safety reasons, I don't think it's really smart, considering I have a full-size basement that could easily be put in. So do I need to, I mean, I would never call this guy again for lots of reasons, but do I need to pay somebody else to come in and convert that last part of my home into this other fuse box? Or, you know, these little fuses are hard to find, and, you know, when they blow.
So it's definitely an active panel, right, the fuse panel?
Oh, it's active, yes, sir.
Okay. So that's called a sub-panel, and that's going to be a sub-panel from the main panel. You said the main panel is now in the basement, or the main panel is outside?
It's outside. We have a full basement, and why he put it outside, I have no clue, but he put the main panel.
Yeah, that makes no sense, because the only time you usually see full panels outside is maybe a condominium situation, and then they're in utility closets. So I can't imagine why that was done that way. It doesn't make sense. It sounds to me like you do need a better electrician to come in and take care of this. If it makes you feel any better, the fact that you have a fuse box does not mean that it's unsafe. Fuses are actually quite safe if it's the right size fuse matched against the wire that's hooked up to that circuit. And so to know if that's the case, somebody has to open the panel and say, okay, this is number 14 wire, so it's a 15 amp fuse, and this is number 12 wire, so it's a 20 amp fuse, and so on, and physically write that like right above the fuse on the panel so you know what size to put in there. Because it's too easy with a fuse box to put in a 20 amp fuse on a wire that's only rated for 15 amps, then of course that's potentially unsafe. So it does sound like you need another electrician. It's obviously not a do-it-yourself project. And unless there's some compelling code reason in your part of the country to put that outside, I don't understand why they would have done that. And, you know, you could consider rerunning it back to the inside. And unfortunately, that's kind of where we're at. It's not an easy fix. It's one that's going to require the investment of a good electrician.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, with all the lawn and garden work going on right now, you may be storing more hazardous liquids than you like. We're talking about gas and oil and grease. So we're going to have some tips on the best way to take care of those flammable liquids safely so that your garage or shed does not become a fire hazard.
Now, first, the most common and the most dangerous flammable is obviously gasoline, but there are other highly flammable products that you've got in your garage that you need to consider. I'm talking about paint thinner, charcoal lighter fluid, kerosene, and that's just naming a few. Now, the problem, however, isn't just spills. All of these liquids give off invisible vapors that can ignite if they come in contact with even the smallest of sparks. So you've got to keep them properly labeled, tightly sealed, in non-glass containers, and as far away as possible from anything that can produce a spark.
Or even an open flame. I mean, for example, have you ever noticed that gas water heaters in a garage are always stacked on top of blocks that put them a foot or more off the floor? Well, there's a reason for that, because gasoline vapors are heavier than air. So if you were to spill gasoline in the car and it collects at the floor and then starts to pile up, so to speak, if it comes in contact with the flame from a gas water heater, the pilot light, well, kaboom happens. So you want to make sure that those water heaters are off the ground, because that could prevent and explosion due to those gas fumes. So you have to really be aware of what you're snoring in your garage, because it's not only what you see, it's what you can't see that can really cause a problem. But we are here, and we hope that you can see that we are ready to help you with your home improvement projects, no matter what they are, inside or out, garages, basements, kitchens, bathrooms, you name it. Give us a call right now, and let's talk about what's going on in your house at 1-888-MONEYPIT.
All right, now let's welcome a husband and wife team, Bill and Jean from Missouri, tackling a garage project. Welcome, guys.
We're building a garage, and we were curious about the concrete floor in this garage. Does it need to be 4 inches? Should it be more than 4 inches thick? And then also, what kind of finish would you recommend that we put on the concrete?
Well, for a garage floor, especially if you're going to have any heavier equipment in there, I would probably go with at least 6 inches, and I would make it a reinforced garage floor. In other words, I would pour it through woven wire mesh or whatever reinforcement material you choose. You want to make sure that the soil beneath the floor is thoroughly tamped, because that's where most people go wrong. If they're in a hurry to get the garage floor poured, they don't take the time to really thoroughly pack down the soil underneath. And if you don't, it'll ultimately crack. And in terms of the finish, I think probably the best concrete finishes today are the epoxy-based finishes. You mix up the epoxy. It's two parts. There's a hardener and the base product. You mix it together. You apply it, you have all sorts of different color and different finish options you can do with that, but it chemically cures. And once it does, it really locks in tight to the concrete, so it's not going to peel off, and it gives you really terrific protection.
What about using a polisher to polish the concrete?
That's an option as well, but you still have to have something that's ultimately going to seal in that surface, because remember, concrete is extremely porous, and in a barn, who knows what's going to be spilled on that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I did a little research on concrete polishing, and it's quite an operation. I mean, it's not...
It's not for the faint of heart, eh?
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do it myself. Oh, no.
No, you were going to have your wife do it.
Hey, you went around. No. My concrete man said that 4 inches... All I'm going to put in this garage is a couple of old cars. Antique cars.
Yeah, then you want that shiny floor so the cars look awesome.
That's right. I want shiny.
All right, Bill and Jean, thanks so much for calling us at 888-MONEYPIT.
You are tuned to the Money Pit Home Improvement Radio Show, on air and online at MoneyPit.com. When we come back, we're helping somebody who's working on an older home and really wants to keep that old home look. So we're going to help them find some replacement hardware that looks the part. So stick around.
You live in a Money Pit.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Money Pit is presented by Greenworks Power Tools. Make life easier with battery power. Optimal performance without the cost and frustration of gas. Save time and money with battery-powered Greenworks tools. Visit GreenworksTools.com to learn more.
Making good homes better, this is the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Here to help you with your home improvement project. Give us a call right now with your questions at 1-888-MONEYPIT, presented by HomeAdvisor.com. Never worry about overpaying for a job. Just use HomeAdvisor's True Cost Guide to see what others paid for similar projects. That's all online for free at HomeAdvisor.com.
And while you're online, post your question in the Money Pit community section, just like Janice in Rhode Island did. Now, Janice writes, we're in the process of remodeling our 1940s home. All the existing doors have mortise-style locks, antique knobs, and back plates that are original to the house. However, all of the keys are missing. I'd like to replace the locking mechanism, but keep the antique back plates and knobs. They look great. Is there a way to keep using these old knobs and back plates, but add in the new locking mechanism? Thanks for your help.
Yeah, I think yes and no is my answer, Janice, because there are certainly many websites and suppliers like houseofantiquehardware.com and antiquesupply.com. These sites have been created to address this very issue, though most use reproductions of the antiques rather than the original locks because of the challenges of merging those new mechanisms with the older hardware. So in the end, it might serve you best to replace the entire lock in its entirety by purchasing one that looks antique in design from a site like this. Adding new parts to the old lock might not work well. You might end up going back and forth, you know, to try to find just what you need. Of course, you could engage a locksmith if you can find one that, you know, has maybe a storeroom in the back with those kinds of parts. But I suspect that you might be better off just replacing that with reproduction hardware. It's going to be easier and less expensive in the long run, and it's going to look almost the same.
All right, next up, we've got a post here from Sharon. Now, Sharon writes, is it the owner's responsibility to clean out the septic tank and have it inspected before the sale of a home? Yeah, that's a good question. Do you have to provide a report on what's going on?
I'm not going to say there's a hard and fast rule on that, but typically, if there's going to be a septic inspection done, it's going to be paid for by the buyer, not by the homeowner. However, if you had service work done, you know, within some number of months of selling the house, then that certainly would be good information to have. And if your company that did the work found no issues, that might be worth passing on to the buyer as well. So it's not necessarily a requirement, but it's a good thing to do, along with all the other good things that you should be doing if you're putting your house on the market, like making sure that all of your mechanical systems, the service on them is up to date. I can't tell you how many times, Leslie, when I, as a home inspector, would go into a basement or a crawl space or a closet and look at a furnace, and it was clearly ignored for like the last 20 years, except for last week, you know, where you could tell it's like dirty, disgusting, and rusty, and the dirt is caked on the fan blades, and it's got a brand new filter. You know, it's like they just did that. That to me means you ignored it and then just last minute, you know, tried to make it look better.
Oh, like wait, is that
lipstick
wrong?
On the pig.
No,
yes, it is wrong. So you want to make sure you get everything properly serviced and any minor things like small things like rot. Because I got to tell you, buyers always think the worst of any of that kind of stuff. Even if it's a small repair, they can think it's indicative of your whole house falling apart, that they're actually buying a real life money pit. So clean it up before you put it on the market. You'd be much better off in the end.
Yeah, and believe me, those service plans are not expensive, and they're there to be used. So use them.
This is the Money Pit Home Improvement Show. We hope you're enjoying this beautiful spring weekend. And if you're out taking care of your house, we're with you every step of the way. You can always call us at 1-888-MONEYPIT, or if you can't get through, post your question to the community page at moneypit.com. If we're not in the studio, we will call you the next time we are. But for now, that's all the time we have. I'm Tom Kreitler.
And I'm Leslie Segretti.
Remember, you can do it yourself,
but you don't have to do it alone.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.